Hello, this is Ranjini Joshua, and you are tuned into the PR Playbook podcast. Today, we are continuing our startup series where we're talking to John Hacker of Neargear.
Welcome to the PR Playbook podcast, the only podcast giving you actionable skills and advice you need to execute a strategic PR program. Warning. What you hear next may lead to brand awareness and increased sales and customer exposure. Now here's your host, Ranjini Joshua.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me. I'm Ranjini Joshua, the host of the PR Playbook podcast, also the CEO of the Silver Telegram. This series is called the Startup Series. We're going to be interviewing a series of startups, talking about their PR, marketing, and social media challenges, how they overcame them or campaigns they ran that were very successful, things we could have done better, and kind of learning firsthand from these different startups and learning a little bit more about different cool startups in the industry. So thank you for joining us, and I hope you guys enjoy. If you know a startup that might be interesting for this series, please shoot me a line, ranjini@thesilvertelegram.com. Also, last but not least, we are about to launch our newest podcast called Sweet Startups. You could check it out on sweetstartupspodcast.com, and it will be available starting April 1st. Check it out, and thanks for joining. Did I say that right, John?
Oh, that's right.
Perfect. And Neargear launched their kind of flagship new product, ZenBuds, at CES. So, John, welcome to the PR Playbook. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. So again, just to give you guys some background on what the ZenBud is and what we do at Neargear. What the ZenBud is really is it's stress management in a wearable. It's a headset that you put on and uses ultrasound to help you relax and be more calm within 5 minutes. We typically suggest that people use it consistently for stress resilience over time, which is where the real gold is. We had over 300 people come by the stand at CES. And we had some really great responses. So we're very much looking forward to really getting this out there and having more people use and get ultrasonic relaxation and peace of mind.
Now, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background. You had mentioned your background in, I think it's bioengineering. Is that right?
Biomedical engineering.
And obviously, wellness is becoming a huge topic. Mental health, all those things are really emerging this year. And there was a ton of mental health and wellness tech that was present at CES as well this year. Tell us a little bit more about the space, kind of how you got involved into it.
For sure. And I mean, I would trace back a lot of that growth in wellness technology. It's been going on for a good number of years now, but COVID really accelerated a lot of these products. But anyways, so I've been really interested in this space for a while. The mind is one of the few places left in medicine that has real potential for innovation. And I would trace that personally to how little we understand it and how important it is to everyday life. We all have mental health and we all have to manage it. And I got to be honest with you, we're all pretty bad at it. So any assistance we can get there really is what's going to be pushing us forward.
And then how did you guys end up coming up with this wearable device? Because I'm sure you've tested it. I'm guessing in the process of developing some stress management tool, you probably tested out a ton of different options.
Yes, this has been a journey and a half, and I won't bore you with the long details, but I'll give you a short overview. Originally, we were actually a transcranial ultrasound company. We were looking at particularly focus and increasing performance and learning. And then we realized that there's already a lot of things out there that can help you do that. And it's not really a market that needs innovation right now, is the best way I would say it. You'll find 30 tools on the internet that'll help you do that and also 30 products on the market. And a lot of times it really just comes down to being less stressed and being able to, that is the best way to be focused. Right. And that along with a couple other things with our technology really pushed us in this direction that we went. I don't know if I actually ever really went over how our product works, so maybe we'll do that a little bit later, but that ties into a little bit of why we went this direction. The vagus nerve, which is what we target, is a very, very prime target for stress and stress relief, especially with ultrasound.
I guess one thing that we forgot to discuss in our pre-call was if you have a unit with you.
So I don't have one with me on hand. Typically, I always have one in my office because I like to use it. But we just got back from CES, so a lot of them are packed away. And we brought most of our inventory with us.
All right. I'll make sure our guy, Ben, he's going to put one on the screen for you guys so you guys can see if you're watching the podcast on YouTube. If you're listening, well, you're going to have to watch the podcast on YouTube or go to the website, actually, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We've got a lot of good product images on the website that'll show you a little bit about the ZenBud and how it works. To give you a little bit of a more spoken overview, it enters one ear like this. You put it on and it's just a headset.
Yeah.
And that's all it needs to be. We spent a long time engineering it to make it what I would say as normal as possible. Something that's not overly intrusive. There's a lot of companies out there where you'll see these really weird tech devices. Either they go on the neck or they're very obviously something like from a sci-fi show. And some of our team joked around going that direction, but what people need is something that they can use in their daily lives. And right. So that's what we built.
So one of the big questions when we're talking to startups is really talking about how you're marketing these new products. You and I had talked earlier, and we actually talked about how you went to CES Unveiled, which is a great press event that's been happening for decades at CES, and you can meet the press and kind of introduce them to your product. But you also mentioned an upcoming Kickstarter campaign. So can you tell me a little bit about your process of why you chose Kickstarter and any other ideas that you have in marketing this product moving forward?
So I think Kickstarter, especially for products like this, your product may or may not fall into that niche. That is a first thing. And we had to take a lot of time to think about if where we're going makes a lot of sense with that type of campaign and platform. Ours does, and we've seen a lot of success in similar companies in the past that have launched on Kickstarter and then gone on to build consistent revenue streams and slowly grow their base. In particular, though, Kickstarter is the ultimate way, I would say, to test product market fit. I could point to actually probably Nuvana Life would be a good company to point to here. On their Kickstarter, they were quote unquote electronics pleasure, essentially. Like they would stimulate a nerve in your body and you'd feel pleasurable. That was how they marketed it. And they saw some success with that, but it clearly didn't hit the market fit they wanted because they actually innovated off of that. And they went more into the wellness space that this helps promote your wellness on everyday life as time went on. And without the experiences of the Kickstarter, they wouldn't have had that real market data, at least not nearly as quickly, on their success metrics.
I really like that you mentioned that because as you know, an agency, we worked on many, many Kickstarter campaigns and Indiegogo and whatever crowdfunding campaigns that we've worked on. And I think that's one thing that people often miss is that is your product a fit for the platform, which is what you addressed? And the second thing is like really understanding what that platform is going to do for you. It may not like jump off like some of these other products have in the past. This may not be a $5 million campaign. It could be a $5 campaign. It could be a $500,000 campaign. You know, like obviously you want the best for your product, but I think one of the things that people assume, especially when they're going into crowdfunding, is that, oh, we're going to put it on Kickstarter. Kickstarter is great. They're going to choose us as the product they love, and then it's going to be gangbusters from there. But part of it is an experiment. Is that correct?
Oh, for sure. And I'd also note, just putting a product on Kickstarter and not putting in any extra work is a great way to have it go nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're very familiar with this, but there is a lot of work to running a successful Kickstarter that's behind the scenes. Even if you have the best launch page in the world, if people don't know that it's there, they're not going to see it and they're not going to back your project.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love what you guys are doing, actually. I love this like pilot program that you're running right now. So just maybe you can give us a quick view of your pilot program so people can understand what you're doing.
For sure. So there is a $750 buy-in into the program. And essentially what you do, you own the unit. We'll send you a unit. All we ask is that you give us some feedback on your usage and what you feel with it, what you think of it. And that helps us get a lot of data so that we understand how to communicate this product to other people, both in our Kickstarter campaign and moving forward. It's kind of like a beta for the video game, essentially, except for
This is pretty much a production unit, though, right? Like, I mean, obviously, now you're going to have iterations based on feedback, but it's not a 3D printed unit, or it's not a what do they call? What is it called? I can't think of it right now, but not a
minimum.
You have
minimum
the word
viable product.
No, I not mean, an MVP, but you have the word pilot in my brain where that other word should be. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a sample. It's not pre-production. No. It is the actual, like,
no, this,
what
these
something
are units.
Like.
They work. And, you know, part of what we like to say with the pilot is this is your opportunity to be among the first people in the world to use these. Yep. And what you're paying for with that $750 is that early access, so to speak,
right,
to these units. Because we are scaling production right now. And that's the reason why we're not, that's another reason why Kickstarter is great, is it essentially can provide you revenue ahead of time to build that inventory in those production lines. But you have to, again, you have to plan this out. You really can't just go at this half-cocked and expect success.
Well, I love, how did you get into CES? I guess that would be one question that I would ask you, because not a lot of companies would go to CES this far in advance before their Kickstarter. How did that all come about?
Well, first off, we applied. That helped. One of the big reasons that we want to go to CES is, first off, our CTO recommended it. They're absolutely wonderful. They have a lot of experience. We're located in Rochester, which I like to call as Kodak's corpse. So there's a lot of neat pickings, and Stan was one of those. He's absolutely lovely. But anyways, we chose to go to CES, first off, because it's a great way to meet the people that are going to help you move to the next stage.
Yeah.
If you're in a business, and especially a startup, and you have something and it's ready to go to at least a minor extent, you should go. Mm-hmm. Second is we were able to have over 300 people in the booth doing demos.
Yeah.
Trying out these devices, and that provide invaluable data. What people were able to use the device, how they used it, how they interacted with it, major. That's gold. And I mean, we've had talked with over 500 people prior, but having that on just a short span also is a great durability test for these devices, which, by the way, none of them broke. They're all still good to go. We built these things like tanks. You're pretty sure you could throw it at the wall. You can submerge it. It's just going to keep working. Because we took durability really seriously. Anyways, I would highly suggest it.
Yeah,
just
make sure
to bring some good sneakers.
I think that was exactly. Comfortable shoes is always a win. I think that was just a great way to preview the product in a very successful way. And then you had mentioned, and I just saw that you had gotten some coverage in Tech Radar. I would say the one thing that you guys might have missed, and I don't know if you did something, and it media has been getting a little bit more difficult to read at some of these shows, is tapping into that media list to get coverage and to get that, you know, early excitement with the media to get them to stop by the booth. And it's sometimes hard, especially when you're a startup, early stage.
Yeah.
But you guys had units. So that's why I'm like, oh, that's kind of a missed opportunity. But I think you still have a really great opportunity because you have these pilot units to potentially get not only customer feedback, but maybe even media feedback before your Kickstarter campaign. And that's one thing that I always recommend for people that are going into Kickstarter is have some production ready units to sample with media review units, what we call them, so that they can give you feedback or that little gem of a quote, you know, whatever their experience is early on. And then you guys have that for that Kickstarter campaign, which is what you're collecting now with some of these pilots, right?
For sure. I mean, and we actually do have a couple people that have requested demos. We have emailed the mailing list, though sadly more post CES than pre CES. There's actually a couple other things. If you're looking to go to CES, prepare 8 months in advance.
Yeah.
Is what I would suggest. And the reason why I say that is there are a couple awards that we could have applied for. If we had applied for them, like the innovation awards. And you just have to do those so far in advance. It's almost ridiculous. You really have to know when you're going, where you're going, and why you're going.
Yeah.
We were still early into, very early in development.
Well, but you're still pretty early. So I think because now you'll be qualifying for the next year's Innovation Awards because you haven't technically launched.
Yes, potentially.
So, yeah,
we'll go for them. We'll go for them.
Hopefully.
Yes.
I think, there's a whole bunch of media awards that were kind of available. Yeah, I agree. But I think more than that, I think you probably got some really great visibility. I think you guys are doing this in a great way. Tell us a little bit about, I don't think you know yet when your Kickstarter campaign is starting. It's still like kind of pending. But tell us about the Kickstarter campaign and then the reservation that you had mentioned to me for your website for some of the pre-units.
Of course. So we're still working out some of the final details on when exactly we want to run this campaign. So I'm not going to give any particular date yet. That being said, we are currently doing reservations for units where, and this is also, if you're doing a Kickstarter, do this, where you put a dollar now, net down now, and you get a $100 discount on the price that we run at the campaign in order to purchase a unit. The reason why we do this is because a paid list has closer to a 90% conversion rate versus a mailing list, which I believe is the flip side to closer to a 10 for these type of campaigns. So we are really excited to open that up, and we do love it when people reserve units on there because it helps us validate the idea even more. And we're a company at this point, so our product even more, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And also it helps us really start building up that list for Kickstarter. You want, again, another thing that for Kickstarters, because we're going on this track, is you do want to cover your entire expected amount in the first 24 hours. I've heard that over and over again.
Yes.
From people for algorithm reasons. Okay, good. I'm sure you've talked about that plenty of times.
Absolutely. Also. Yeah. We talked about that. Yeah. You want to have your goal met. I mean, you kind of basically want to know that you're going to meet your goal before you even start the campaign. So that's the thing. And then everything else is above and beyond and more like hype and excitement, right? So this is, I mean, that's why I really love what you're telling me and how you guys are working this campaign, because in this day of an age of crowdfunding, it's no longer those, like, you don't have those unicorns anymore, like what we had before, where like a watch would like just go gangbusters in like 50 seconds. You know what I mean? Crowdfunding doesn't work like that anymore because there have been too many people that have been burned by crowdfunding campaigns. What you guys are doing is using in a really smart way for market validation. You already have these like pre-units so people can try it out, pilot units. I like that term better. And then, you know, you're already putting your business, your brand into motion with getting some media covered with Tech Radar and some of these other outlets that are going to really give you guys visibility before your campaign goes out. So people kind of feel like, okay, this is not like a totally brand new thing. They've talked about it at CES. They exhibited at CES. They have units. If I want to buy one now, I can buy for $750, but I'm going to wait for the crowdfunding campaign. So it's like kind of like you're giving people a lot of visibility and options into your production process, which I think in today's crowdfunding is very crucial to a successful campaign. So you're doing all the right thing. So that's good.
Always glad to hear that.
Yeah. So what do you guys, what are you hoping, you know, are you guys going to be kind of a Nurgear? Is that going to be a company that focuses on one product? Are you guys planning on, what are your kind of like long-term vision for this?
For sure. Before I do that, by the way, Zenbud.health, ZNBUD.health. If you want to reserve your unit, please do now.
Absolutely. We'll put all the links in the show notes and everything. But
for
sure.
Yes. Plans for the future. Yes. So we're a wellness device. I do want to make that clear. We're not making medical claims with this right now, though we do have intentions and we're running active clinical trials to assess effectiveness for post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety, among other things. And this type of technology has a lot of potential for it. It's not going to be the same unit you're going to see on the Kickstarter. It's going to be a lot more what I'll call sophisticated. Because again, if we're going to be going through the FDA process for anything, we're going to want to make sure we can make the most effective thing we can. We are hemmed in a little bit on a couple of things by being a wellness product right now. Mm-hmm. And moving that avenue while continuing to sell on wellness markets to make sure everyone has a chance to use this technology is really what I would call the midterm vision of the company. It's going to take a while to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think wellness technology adoption is not, it's not there yet. So I think it's coming, right? So yeah, you have a little bit of ways, but I mean, it's nice to know a roadmap and kind of understanding how this wellness, just the industry, where it's going. I think it's really interesting to see.
Well, can I actually talk a little bit on the industry if you're interested?
Yeah,
I'm going to first make it clear, these are my opinions based off of being in this industry, because I'm sure some people are going to get offended by them. Mm-hmm. But the biggest problem with the wellness industry right now is the sheer amount of BS that's on the market. There are so many companies that do no validation for the product. They don't even do real consumer testing. What they do is they put it in front of people and say, do you feel X or not? There are great psychological experiments that show if you put a sugar pill in someone's mouth and you say, do you feel X or not? Most people are going to say, I feel X. Or even not even a sugar pill. You just hold a piece of plastic up to their skin. And when you don't make sure that your product's working, people lose trust. Mm-hmm. And that's really the problem with the industry right now, is that there is been a growing lack of trust in a lot of these wellness products for good reason. Sure. What we're doing in order to help counteract that is we are running our trials. We have done that research and we will continue to do so. But it really is the burden right now is on the consumer to tell the difference. And it's hard. Because a lot of these websites will say, clinically proven. That just means a study has been conducted at some point in the eternity of the universe on a technology underlying their tech. Science backed. Again, that means the same thing. It doesn't mean that their technology has ever been tested. It doesn't mean that it's effective. It doesn't mean anything. And as long as that remains the case for this industry, you're going to see hindered growth rates. Because if you can't trust a product, how could you put up even $300, $750, or $1,000, even more, in order to use the product? For a car, when you pay for a car, you know it's going to drive places. There are regulations in place that says this car is going to allow me to get from point A to point B.
Right.
For a wellness device, there is no such guarantee right now.
Yeah.
And there are a couple solutions in industry. One of the ways is for companies to self-regulate like we are. But frankly, there's only going to ever be able to do so much for trust.
Absolutely.
The other way is the government needs to step in here and start regulating this industry. And I'd also say the supplement industry, because they are, both of them have products that work. Both of them have products that do not. Mm-hmm. And in order to really help consumers differentiate, there needs to be a slam down. And that's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of time and a lot of people's feelings are going to get hurt, but it has to happen.
Right.
At least that's my opinion. But in order to see real adoption of wellness technologies, trust must be established. And the sad reality of the matter is that there's been so many snake oil salesmen out there destroying trust over and over again that it's going to require some real elbow grease in order to reverse that.
What is your prediction of the time it's going to take?
So I see two potential routes that the government will take, along with, and maybe a third potential route where the industry sorts itself out, though I find that the least likely. First off, for wellness and supplements, the FDA could step in. And a lot, they're currently, it's in the area where they just are deciding not to regulate it. So technically, they do have the congressional authority to come in and start regulating these things, all as medical devices and all as pharmaceuticals. I destroy innovation in this industry. Most of big pharma right now buys from these smaller companies that end up being a wellness or a supplement. And so something else would have to be built in its place. And the FDA does not want to spend the amount of money and resources to do that. I've talked with people in the FDA and they don't want to do that, even though they all recognize it's a problem. The alternative is some sort of new agency or new rules and regulations regarding wellness products that require some sort of minimal form of testing and it gets a stamp of approval. Or alternatively, again, just essentially a weaker FDA pathway. Possible. That's where I see most likely going. In the next 5-10 years, that's where I hope it goes because there's some really strong potential there, but that's to be seen more than anything else. The third is that the industry sorts itself. Natural rules of capitalism. The companies that actually work rise to the top, the ones that don't fall to the bottom. The problem is that right now, frankly, if you have good marketing and PR and advertising, that means a lot more than if your product works. That's a sad reality. And it's great to have both, but one is necessary and the other isn't. And sadly, the one that is necessary is not the product working. And this is for all industries. This isn't just for wellness, supplements, et cetera. This is for everywhere. As long as people buy the product and as long as they believe it's working, that's enough in many industries. In order to shift that is, I don't know if we're really going to see that happening. And that's going to take a while. That's going to take maybe 5-10 years minimum.
5 to 10 years. It's a long time.
It is. So here's the thing. That is without what I would say are interference in the matter. Part of the reason why I started this company in the first place was to start helping address some of these major gaps. And frankly, in neurostimulation, which is where we are, there's a lot of BS out there. And I would say, again, here's opinion. I'm sure people will disagree with me on this, especially you'll have doctors disagreeing and doctors agreeing with me on this. I've talked to both. Electrical stimulation products that are non-invasive do not work, period. Because the energy does not really reach the nerve. And a lot of times you don't see any significant effect over placebo. That doesn't mean a lot to a lot of our listeners, but that's a very controversial statement that I just made. And moving to slowly slow those type of products and to gradate them out at the very least, I'll weaken the statement that at least they are not significant for many users. And moving to move those products out of the industry and move in new generations of products, let's say, for example, ultrasound, is really necessary for the future of this industry.
Yeah. Interesting. That is a lot to chew on. That is a lot to chew on. And I think you're right. I mean, I'm going to go back to the marketing and PR, obviously, that good marketing and PR can do a lot of wonders, whether your product works or not. So that's something I think consumers really need to be careful of. And I think ethically, you know, a lot of, I feel like there's this camp, two different camps of companies right now, ones that are very ethically minded, that are really trying to be authentic and I would say honest and transparent, and then other companies that are just trying to make money. And I think people kind of can see based on who's behind these companies. And I think a lot more people in this generation are doing their homework on these different companies and where they're coming from, what the backgrounds are of the people running it. So I encourage anybody listening to really kind of think about that as they build their brand messaging, their brand visibility, like really kind of, you know, a lot of what we do is thought leadership as a PR agency. And so we actually like pull out the expertise from CEOs and the executives to really show their knowledge of the industry. You're obviously very knowledgeable about the wellness industry, but you know, you can't say that about everybody, right? Some people are just there to sell a product. So I think that's really important when you're branding and positioning is don't just look at the cool reviews that come out, but also take a look at the people behind the product and where they came from, what research they might be doing, or, you know, you don't know yet. Hopefully in this Kickstarter campaign, you'll be able to kind of unveil some of the stuff that you guys have heard, some of the feedback. And I love the idea that, you know, you're talking to lots of different types of people. I think as a PR person who's done a lot of crowdfunding campaigns, it would be great to hear from doctors on the positive sides and the negative sides, or like any of the opposing views is actually very eye-opening. And I think it gives people that transparency and trust that they're looking for too.
For sure. And I mean, it's sadly, it's a very common practice for companies to make straw man arguments when it's against their core directives. It makes sense from like a third grader level.
Yeah.
Hey, so you have your main argument here, you have your product. And so anything that's against it will make a straw man here. But there is a lot of real oomph behind taking someone that is credible, that actually knows what they're talking about, and having a real argument against whatever part of your product, and then being able to properly answer it. And again, there's not always, the stage for that can really depend. Maybe the stage for that is in your website. Maybe that's in a talk that you're doing. Maybe that's in a conference, et cetera. But having that available to people can convince them. I'll also note, you went a little bit into ethically driven companies. Here, my honest opinion on that is that, sadly, there is a competitive advantage to only being minded about profits.
Mm-hmm.
Because you spend less energy and you do things more efficiently for profits. The neat thing is that a lot of times there is a shifting of what actually makes profit to a more ethical-based mindset. But in the end, people that are solely focused on profits are going to have that advantage. And you have to have some sort of other advantage to counter that. And you can't count on a consumer to fully inform themselves. You, as an executive, should be informed on everything to do with your company and your space. The consumer, you have to assume, is informed on nothing. Yeah. And so you are their first introduction to the space. How can you explain to them how the space works without making their eyes glaze over? And how can you do it in a way that's also ethical in telling them the full truth without admitting anything? It's hard. It's practically impossible. We can only ever strive to get as close as possible to that idea.
John, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story so far. We're really excited to see how it unfolds, obviously. And then for everybody listening, I'm going to be back in a couple minutes with some tips on how to launch a product and have a successful crowdfunding campaign and things that you should think about as you're kind of coming out with something new. And I think actually this, you know, ZenBuds case study is such a great thing that we can watch unfold. And hopefully you guys have some really great success. I think you're on the right track and we look forward to seeing what happens with Kickstarter soon, TBD, right?
Yes. Thank you. It has been wonderful talking.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And actually, before we get off, why don't you give us that website again and how people can reach you if they want to talk to you?
For sure. So our website is zenbud.health. That's Z-E-N bud.health. You can also find us at nerdgear.com. They both go to the same place. And that's spelled N-E-U-R-G-E-A-R. My email is Hacker, H-A-C-K-E-R. That is my actual last name. Fun fact, my brother and my father are computer scientists. So they're more traditional hackers than I am. it's hacker@nerdgear.com. If you're either interested in being part of our pilot program, or alternatively, you just want either make comments on one of the very controversial things I said during this podcast, or alternatively, just reach out and chat. I'm always available. Feel free to email me.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, guys, I'm back. And that was a great conversation with John Hacker of Nerdgear and Zen Buds. And I want to talk to you guys about a little bit about crowdfunding and product launches. And that's basically what he's doing. And the great thing about what he's doing, the campaign is not started yet, but he's really seeding the campaign, building trust, and getting the product out there in advance of the campaign. And in today's Kickstarter landscape, you really have to have your almost final product ready to go. Based on what he told me, he said that they're going to be making iterations and they're going to make improvements before the Kickstarter campaign goes live to the actual product. And so this is a great way for them to beta test it. They're offering it at a higher price, looking to have it at a lower price for their Kickstarter campaign, but have actual production units. This also helps the media actually buy into the idea a little bit more, because you can actually have the units in hand, use them right now. So this is another great way to navigate the media that does not cover Kickstarter campaigns. And a lot of them don't anymore. And to kind of circumvent that whole process, you can give them these pilot units. So I think this is a great way, this great example of leveraging pre-sales media before your Kickstarter campaign and really generating a great buzz. So they have baked in a lot of time for this, almost probably a year. From what I understand, it'll probably be closer to Q4 of 2024. So they've really decided that they're going to kind of put a full investment. This is not make or break. Kickstarter isn't a make or break. It's a market validation. It's a proof point. And so this is a great thing to think about when you're getting into our Kickstarter campaign or a product launch in general. Make sure you have these like minimal viable products and get them out to the media, get them out to customers, get those reviews, get those feedback on video, text, articles. I think their startup was featured in Eureka Park. And so that's where I had met them in Eureka Park at CES. So it was great for them to go there. Not everybody has the bandwidth to kind of go to something like CES. But there are other smaller events. There's CES Unveiled that was at CES, but Pepcom has several media events in New York and in San Francisco. You could take a look at those and preview your product to the media there. So there's a lot of opportunity. So the great thing, the takeaway from this conversation was make sure that you're really fully committed and have the knowledge behind the product before you go live. And if you want to create a buzz, this is a great way to do it. They've got their early pilot, which is more expensive for beta testers. And then they've got their $1 reservation fee to help collect a really more credible email list for their Kickstarter campaign. So these are a few lessons you could take away from this conversation. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to John Hacker from Nerdgear. And I look forward to talking to you guys in the next podcast.